evening. I call order the Monroe Public Schools Board of Education work session. Today is Tuesday, January 13th, 2026, and the time is 5:30. Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Heck.
Here.
Mr. Jenkins.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Sabadini.
Here.
Mrs. Taurasi.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Can we please stand for the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next up is discussion items, and I'll turn it over to Superintendent Shaw.
All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody. Well, good evening. So tonight is our time to go over our student data and our school index ratings. And so I see that we have our school data up first. So, Andrea, since that's the one that's up, you have the other presentation, correct?
Yes.
Oh, is it right up there?
This is the state.
Do you have Kathy's?
Yes.
Okay, you want to pop Kathy's up? We're going to run through hers real quick, please. So to our board members, Kathy's the one we're going to actually go with first. Her presentation is this document right here for you. And it's the, so you can follow along with her presentation. And so Kathy Berry is from the ISD. Kathy's job tonight is to make sure everyone understands how the school index ratings are developed. Answer your questions there, and then we're going to walk through those. So if you're wondering to our board members which information we're going to be looking at, it's this one right here. And we provide it to you from the 21 school year through the 25. So, Kathy, if you want to step up to that microphone.
I have to pull my notes. Thank you.
Nope. All yours.
Great.
Well, good evening, everybody. Thank you for having me back. It's been almost exactly a year since we talked about school index last time. So I was asked to do a couple things with you this evening. One is to give a little background about what the school index really is. So why does this index exist? What do the index scores tell us and not tell us? And then from a school board perspective, what might be some things you could do with that? So at the end of about half an hour or so, you'll have a set of productive questions that you can ask, a responsible interpretation of the reports, and a clear way to explain this concept of identified schools to the community. So I was asked to give just a little bit of history. So this is going to be very, very quickly because we do want to take a look at the format of the school index reports as well. So there's a lot more on these pages than we're going to talk about this evening. I'd be more than happy to come back and work with you with more detail at another time. Believe it or not, there was a time before school accountability. 1990, Michigan had Public Act 25, so some of us were here for that. And everything you see that's in gray, these are things that were brand new. So things that we take for granted now, such as school improvement or accreditation or districts providing a core curriculum for all students, annual reports. The state's saying, if you don't do this, we'll pull state aid. That has not always been. That's really been since 1990. And then in 2002, at the national level, we had No Child Left Behind, and many of us were here for that. And everything was about adequate yearly progress. So we went from periodic testing in certain grades to annual testing in many grades. And you can also see, again, in the highlighting, various things that were new. So the state set annual goals for adequate yearly progress. The ultimate goal was to reach 100% proficient by 2014. There was accountability and consequences. And for the first time, we could actually disaggregate or separate out our data to look at various subgroups of students. So that's because we finally had computer systems that could do that. So that did take a while in the education sector to be able to do that. And so we do look at performance of students as a whole and of subgroups. You might remember a time when teachers had to be highly qualified. There was a very strict definition of what that was. And then parents were to be provided a school report card of some kind, depending on whatever the state decided to put together for that. Then in 2015, so notice this is after 2014, when 100% of our students across the nation were going to be proficient, the ESSA Act, Every Child Succeeds Act, came into play. This was an update from NCLB. There was a realization about 5 years into NCLB that there was no way we were going to get 100% of students proficient, especially taking into account subgroups. That was just not going to happen. And so there were some other new things that happened. States were given some flexibility. They could create their own accountability systems as long as they met federal guidelines. They could use factors beyond state testing. There was a big focus on opportunity gaps, so identifying and supporting struggling schools. This was a new thing, so rather than beat schools over the head and say, you're not doing well, the idea was, hey, here's some data you might want to take a look at, and here's some support for you additionally. High-stakes consequences that had been a part of NCLB were reduced, and instead of focusing just on math and reading, there was more of an emphasis on making sure students had access to a full, broader curriculum. And this actually passed with bipartisan support at the national level. On the next piece, there are a few other things that were new. The bottom one might be the most interesting to us this evening. There was a full expectation that there would be accountability and action to affect positive change in our lowest performing schools as defined by ESSA. So a quick trip through the Michigan long and winding road. So some of those things we just talked about were at the federal level. PA 25 was at the state level in Michigan. Again, we had PA 25 before there was anything at the national level, like in 2002 NCLB and ESEA. In 2010, we started to have Michigan top to bottom rankings. You may remember those. And in addition to that, we had the national adequate yearly progress piece. Districts got in on the act instead of just schools and had AMAOs, annual measurable achievement objectives. And then we had accountability scorecards, and I have yet to run into anybody who liked those. People remember those as the green, lime green, yellow, orange, and red reports. And again, I have yet to find anybody who said that that was really helpful or served them well. So as you can see, they didn't last very long. So from 2016 to now, we have the Michigan School Index System, which by federal law is used to identify comprehensive support and improvement schools, additional targeted support schools, and TSI, which I will remember what that is in a few more slides, targeted support and intervention improvement. Then on top of that, the Michigan legislature decided we should have A through F report cards. And this is a national thing. It comes and goes in different states from time to time. So the Michigan legislature required A through F school report cards on top of the accountability system we already had. That ended up being a duplication of work, and the state report cards did not meet federal guidelines, so we couldn't do just the state report cards. So those were discontinued after the 2022-2023 school year. So now we have school index. So I know you've seen various tables and charts of goals for students. This was posted above my desk from, 2002, right up through about 2012 or so. This is what we were supposed to live or die by in terms of percentages of students proficient. And as you might guess, this was a bit ambitious. So simply saying it was going to be this way was not nearly enough to get it done. So setting high expectations is one thing, providing the support is another. And so this got retired. And at the time, some of the administrators in the room might remember there were 50 ways to not make AYP. So in this system, there was a chart like this for each school. And if there was a no for not making AYP in any one of those cells, the school did not make AYP. So if you had 49 yeses and one no, the school was listed as a school not making AYP. It's very different now. Okay, so a lot of people were glad to see that go. So that's been retired. So in terms of school index, what is it? What's it for? Why does it matter? What do these scores represent? What attributes does the index include? What are some common pitfalls that people might fall into when they interpret it? And what are some implications for state identification? And then how do districts use school index? How might the board understand that? And how might the board communicate about the school index? Quick tour. So I'm not going to read this to you. You can read, but in plain language, the school index itself is kind of complicated to read, but it really is about a single school, statewide school accountability system. It applies to every public school in the state, including charter schools. It tries to combine multiple measures of quality into a single 0 to 100 score. So it's not a percentage score. It's simply a 0 to 100 score. MDE uses the index to identify those three required schools, CSI, ATS, TSI, under the federal law, under ESSA, and direct additional supports. So there are currently no sanctions for being an identified school. There are a number of supports instead. And then districts and schools can use the school index as one of several tools to monitor and evaluate quality. So it's not the only thing we're interested in. And you'll see a presentation by Andrea and others that has a lot of local, very pertinent, very helpful data to use to complement what you see in school index. So school index is not a school grade. You're not going to see A through F. It's not based on a single test score. It's not a complete measure. And it's not even the only way or even the best way to compare schools. So I did a quick trip around parts of the county this afternoon, pulling the school index for various schools. And they're all public now, so you can go pull them on My School Data. And the numbers are all over. And there are schools that have very similar overall numbers that when we dig down, look very, very different underneath. So that single numerical score, take that with a lot of salt. The single overall score by itself doesn't mean a whole lot. We need the detail underneath. So what on earth is it good for then? Well, data's here to make us ask questions. And so the school index raises a lot of questions for us in terms of what's going well and where can we improve. It's also that single statewide comparison framework, so it's one formula of many that could have been chosen, and it is that required federal way to trigger supports for identified schools. So why might this matter to you? Well, you are our local representatives to govern the school district, and so it would be helpful if you understood state accountability to, on the governance level, the support level, and also to ensure that resources, time, and talent, and treasure are targeted towards the state-identified schools whenever we have them. It's not a permanent label. It does change over time. And that there's support for the required improvement planning. And then also to work in terms of priority setting and monitoring over time, and to do this in conjunction with your strategic plan, your mission, your vision, your goals, your values, all of those things. And then you, of course, are messaging to the community. So it helps to have a little bit of understanding about this so that it can be clearly and responsibly messaged. It's not as simple as saying, these schools are good and these schools are bad. It's not about a judgment call like that at all. The state does not label them that way at all. And again, this is one of many tools that we use so that each and every student in our district can get a rigorous and supported high-quality education. So it's not the sexiest thing. It's when you go on My School Data and you, there are such things as sexy graphs. This is not one. It's pretty straightforward on the overview page, and I believe you may have been handed a deck of those for Monroe Public Schools. So what you've received, my understanding, is you've received the overview pages. So it's essentially like the table of contents to a much longer report. And so there are 8 tiles on the overview page. These are available from 21-22 onward. And then if you go online to My School Data, you can click in any one of these 8 areas, and then you can dig down to the actual data that leads to the index rating that's within the box. So what on earth do these zeros to 100s represent? So again, these aren't exactly percentages. They're simply points. kind of like maybe when you were in school and your goal in your math class or social studies class or Spanish class was to get as many points as you could to get that B or get that C, whatever. It's an accounting strategy. So each section has 100 points that can be earned, and schools earn those points by making progress towards meeting state targets. So the state sets long-term targets, long-term meaning now we're out to 2032, and they're in specific areas as well as in overall areas of quality. And so everything that underlies each of these eight boxes are weighted averages. And weighted averages can be a bit tricky. One piece of that weighted average puzzle, we take a lot of factors into play, we run it through a formula. If any of those factors are missing, the formula changes. There are pieces of the formula that are worth more than others. So that's one of the things that makes school index a little bit tricky to understand. Each fall, my colleague Chris Todd and I both have to get our school index brain back together because we really have to think a bit differently. Schools that meet or exceed the state target in an area get all 100 points. So if the state target is at, let's say, 54% of students making growth, and a school has 54% or more students making growth, they immediately get that payoff of 100 points, with one little caveat. The caveat is schools are expected and have been expected for a very long time to test 95% or more of their students. As long as they test 95% or more of the students, they get to keep all the points they earn. If they test 80% of their students, those points are prorated. And for most of our schools in the county, those scores really don't get prorated by much. Schools overall are testing nearly every student. In fact, that was one thing that 3 years ago was an easy find when Monroe first had identified schools. We discovered that there were pockets where not all the kids were being tested. And the staff, I have to say kudos to the staff, the administrators, the coaches, they have done a fantastic job, absolutely fantastic job of getting our kids assessed. State targets are changed when warranted. We had this little thing called COVID after school index started. And so the targets were adjusted so that we didn't have gobs and gobs and gobs of schools who were in need of support. The state can only handle so many schools. And so the targets were adjusted accordingly. So here are some of the gory details. Not every school is going to have every component. For instance, elementary schools don't have graduation rates. Kindergarten graduation doesn't matter, okay? Which is unfortunate, I suppose, for accountability. Pardon me?
I went to my sixth grader graduation.
English learner progress. This is something that for many, many years, none of our schools in the county were accountable for because we just didn't have enough students who are identified as English language learners. This last year, Monroe Public Schools has two schools who are accountable for English learner progress. The number of students needed for accountability, which is normally 30, those two schools hit that number and they're now accountable for English learner progress. Let's see, school quality and student success, 14% is kind of a catch-all. These are things that are characteristics of high-quality schools. The biggest chunk of this is K-12 on-track attendance. So even though our K-2 students don't take state assessment, they are still part of the accountability for our elementary schools. And if you're wondering what on earth I mean by state targets, and again, these are more of the gory details, the state set some baseline targets back, reset them back in 2021, 2022. And so these are actual percentages of students. So the state set a goal in 2021, 2022, or a cut score of just over 41% of students being proficient in ELA. If schools had fewer than that,
they were deemed as not meeting that requirement or not meeting that for accountability. Notice our long-term goal in 2031, 2032, which is closer than it used to be, only 6 years away, is only at 56%. And for math, it had been 28% of students proficient. In it, by spring of 2032, they want to see at least 43, almost 44% of students proficient. These are not high targets. These targets are set to identify the schools most in need of support. They aren't targets that are set really high with the idea of let's identify the best, whatever best is, schools in the state. It's the opposite, which schools need the most support. So it will also help to understand the difference between achievement and growth, and this may help when Andrea and team are presenting the data for the schools from your internal data. So achievement, when we talk about achievement data, we're saying, where are students today? We're taking a snapshot today of where they are compared to standards, compared to a benchmark. We want to know how proficient are individual students, how proficient are each one of you? What is your summative score there? We also want to know about subgroups of students. How are our girls performing compared to our boys? How are our Caucasian students performing compared to our minority students? How are our students with disabilities performing compared to our economically disadvantaged students, and so on? Two cautions. Achievement is strongly influenced by student entry points, so what students knew when they came in, and student demographics. Students who have IEPs, many, many of those students have significant learning challenges. And so we can help those students grow in their learning, but they aren't necessarily going to become proficient. If they weren't proficient last year, they may not be proficient this year. That may be a truly K-12 journey for some of those students. Same thing for maybe some of our economically disadvantaged students or some of our other groups of students. So we can move the growth needle. It's much harder to move achievement. Not saying it can't be done. Moving the achievement needle, especially for attributes that tend to be tied towards either health or affluence or non-affluence, require really strong school and district systems and systems alignment. So if the school, if the district are really, really well functioning, are really tackling all the, all the bases that are needed academically, behaviorally, emotionally, and so on for students, if they really are providing those wraparound services, kids can grow faster and they can reach proficiency more readily. Growth, on the other hand, is about how much progress did students make. So it's entirely possible that maybe you all have decided to run a marathon in June. I know everybody's betting on David for this. So if you all decided to run a marathon and all we cared about was achievement, who would the successful people be? The ones who do what? So that they can
finish.
Yes, and preferably finish in something less than 12 or 14 hours,
days,
right?
14 days.
Yeah, so achievement is like finishing the marathon in a respectable amount of time. But does that mean that all of, many of you are destined to failure because by June there's just no way you're going to run 26.2 miles in 3 hours, 4 hours? Is that failure? What if you could only run half a mile now, but by June you can run three? Is that failure? No, it's growth. So we take into account both growth and the achievement. So how are each of you doing compared to where you started, and how are subgroups doing? Do we somehow have a training program where the ladies in the group are progressing much more rapidly than the guys? You know, so we need to watch out for those sorts of things. Are we improving learning enough for our students? And which students are improving in their learning and why? Which students aren't yet improving and why? And then schools can strongly affect growth and progress. So it's entirely possible that we may see achievement scores that we're not real thrilled with for a while, but yet what's cooking under the surface is kids are still growing. So they are growing up from the bottom. They are moving from a low level of proficiency up to the next level, up to the next level. It just may take a while to get through that hoop, to get across that ribbon at the end of that marathon. Doesn't mean they're not growing or they're not learning. It just means that they haven't crossed that proficiency hoop yet. So please keep in mind, a single piece of data, a single report is not enough to take corrective action. We want to look at a number of pieces together, and we want to, when we have a piece of data or a report, a single one, we can ask productive questions. So we might need to gather more data. We might want to do a root cause analysis and so on. A single piece of data or a single report is not a trend, and I believe Mr. Shaw gave you some trend data on those overview pages for the schools. So we really want to look at 3 years or more of school index trends before we draw any high-stakes conclusions. Please be a three-year-old. Ask why. Why does the data look the way it is? Why is this school's data say this, but the other school's data says that? It may not necessarily mean the teachers are doing anything different. It may well be the kids in the school. There's something different about the kids. So ask a lot of questions. Look at the cohort sizes. A cohort of 100, a group of 100 students, that data reacts a lot differently than a group of 3 students. Okay? So what we say is the N size matters, the number of students matters. Take a look down in the components and the subgroups rather than just the overall score, and where we can, avoid comparing schools based only on the school index overall value, the aggregate value. There is so much that's behind that value that, again, two schools can have about the same overall index score and look vastly different underneath that. The school improvement efforts would be very different underneath that. So in terms of the types of schools, we have universal support schools, which are the ones that are not identified for additional state support. We have targeted support and improvement. These schools pop up periodically in the county. Airport High School was a TSI school for a while, and it just means they get a very light touch with state support. Additional targeted support schools, again, these schools pop up from time to time, and you can see the criteria there. They are identified every 6 years, and as of this last year, there are what are called early exits. Basically, schools who make the appropriate progress can exit after the third year. That does mean they give up the additional money that they're getting through grants. And so many schools have said, hey, we're good, but we still want the support, so don't exit us. And they don't have to exit. And then the CSI schools, Comprehensive Support and Improvement, those schools are identified every 3 years. So there's a statewide systems of supports, and MDE, you can see what MDE does on the left. A big part of that is the regional assistance grant money. We also have people at the state level who have time and talent who can work with us. And then in terms of locally, thankfully, we're not under AYP anymore. Nobody's trying to take over Monroe Public Schools like they did Detroit years ago. You might remember the Detroit takeover. That does not happen in Michigan anymore. The state does expect that we will have improvement plans tied as part of MyKIP, the standard continuous improvement process and reporting tool. The ISD gets involved in part because the money flows through the ISD, the grant money flows through there, but the ISDs across the state also have staff who have expertise that can be dedicated in terms of time to serve the districts that have identified schools. And so you have Chris Todd and I, as well as any other resources you might need from the ISD. The two of us are the ones providing the most support. And so as far as your role, these are suggestions. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying these are things you could do. Ensure that resources and supports do flow to the identified schools. There may need to be some differential funding because those schools seem to have some needs that maybe the other schools who aren't identified don't have. Please monitor progress. Be warm demanders. Set expectations, but also provide high levels of support. Work collaboratively. And then clearly communicate inside and outside the district. So you may be aware, and with these schools changing names and formats, this gets a little interesting. So Arborwood had been an ATS school. Their school code now belongs to Hollywood. which is now a K-4 building. They are now the ATS school. Custer was K-6, now Custer's K-4. Both of those schools will be testing third and fourth graders. They are no longer responsible for fifth and sixth grade test scores, fifth and sixth grade attendance. Monroe Middle School, unchanged, seventh and eighth grade, is a CSI school with the most support. Orchard Center High School now has, I believe, the virtual program as part of that school. It's formally part of that, which it was not as formally part of that previously. They are a CSI school. Manor, which is now K-4, Raisinville, which is now K-4, and Monroe High, which remains 912, they are listed as universal support schools. Waterloo, being closed a year, they would have likely been identified as either an ATS or CSI school. With the closure, that resets the clock, and so they have a clean slate, and we'll see what happens after the school year. They may get identified for TSI or ATS, actually for TSI, because that'll be next year. They may not. Same thing with Cantrick. Cantrick's now got fifth and sixth grade, all the fifth and sixth graders. So where some of our buildings had a small number of subgroups because they had 15, 20 students in a particular racial, ethnic, economically disadvantaged, whatever category, now those kids are all together at Cantrick. So Cantrick will have subgroups. And so don't be surprised if something might happen there. It's not a bad thing. Support is a good thing. There is money attached, people attached. So this is not a full story about schools. It's just one piece. So there are some questions. I promise you some questions that you might ask. And there are two slides of these, so I'm going to let you read through those. But these are questions that you can think about asking of your team here at Monroe Public Schools. And they're at the governance level, they're at the oversight level, they're at the support level. They don't get into the weeds at the classroom level. That's what the rest of the staff is for. So you have those. And then in terms of the school index and what are called AERs, we're now in AER season, everybody's favorite time of year. These are both openly available on My School Data. And if you have the document that you have on paper, if you have that electronically, those should be live links. But this is part of My School Data and our state taxpayer dollars at work is this school data is freely available after an embargo period to everybody in the state. So you can go and look at any school you want and see how they're doing too. So annual education reports just became public yesterday. And there's a whole new format, so people are contacting me about what do I do with this thing. I sent out some information today, but I encourage you to take a peek at those for your buildings. And again, it's about what supports do we provide, not about, oh, this is good, this is bad, and so on. So on the left-hand side, things that are would be helpful to say. When people say, what's the school index thing and what's going on with Monroe with school index? So all those things on the left would be productive things to ask or to say. How are we going to track progress? Administrators at every building, because even the non-state identified buildings have a wealth of information in those detailed school index reports where they can make ask questions and dig deeper into their data and make improvements. On the other side, avoid saying things like, oh, this number proves that so-and-so school is good, or this number proves that this school is bad, or we've got four identified schools. We're being punished. We are not being punished. Monroe Public Schools, on the just the opposite, is getting a substantial amount of money to support those schools. Punishment would be we get identified and there is no support. Some people think the school index is meaningless. If you have that opinion, that's fine. I just might encourage not, you know, be careful how you message that. A single initiative does not fix everything. So that's why we have multi-pronged systems of support. Be careful about comparing to other schools because, again, until you dig down into the detail, we don't really know what's running under the hood. And if you see a school index score that seems pretty high in the 80s or in the 90s, it would be really easy to say, everything's all right, yes, everything's fine. Some of you know that. At Berry Patch School. That's not necessarily the case. There are some things under that 80, under that 90, that still need improvement. They just may not have risen to the level of a state identification. So you have your summary page. These are the three big takeaways. So what is that we're learning? How are we responding? And there are resources for you. There are some links that, again, if you have the digital version, these are live links. And this is me at the ISD and my colleague. And I need somebody to tell me what time we're looking at. 10 minutes, 5 minutes?
10 minutes.
Cool, all right. This was originally set for 30 minutes, so I apologize if your head is spinning. But I tried to make it so it was pretty accessible. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the overview reports that everybody has. Okay. So you have, I believe, two sets of overview reports. One is multi-year, and one is just this last year?
Correct.
Okay. So.
They're all together. So if you go right in order.
Yeah.
And then it gets right to that.
So I'm going to skip over the just this year one for right now, because the just this year is in the multi-year. So if you might remember, on one of the slides I mentioned, it really helps to look at multiple years of data. And so if we take a look, let's take a look at the Arborwood. I think they're more or less alphabetical, or all the elementaries are together first. So if we look at Arborwood going back to 2021, 2022, their overall index started at 28.5. I looked this afternoon. Their current index is at 43.73. So is that better or worse, like at the eye doctor? Better. It's better. Now, is 43.73, is that where we're happy to be? We're not happy to be there. We're happier to be there than at 28. Okay. But we still have work to do, and that's okay. It also identifies which support category we're in. It tells us about our various growth index, proficiency index. Those numbers, I believe, have also changed a little bit. Yep, in 24-25, growth index went up quite a bit. It is not unusual to see numbers go up and then come back down and go up and come back down. It'd be great if everything was linear, meaning it starts low and goes in a nice, neat path upwards. Algebra students would just love it if the world was linear. The world is not that way when it comes to people. So you're going to see some ups and some downs, and that's okay, as long as the trend is generally upward. Some things to keep in, so as you look at those, it may help for you to even look and say, kind of put your finger at the 21, 22 for a given school and just flip through, pick a category and see how does it change, if it's changing. Custer, the overall, went up from 33.5 to 49.6. Their growth index went up. Their proficiency index went up. School quality and success index went way up. So we've got some success going on at Custer. At Manor, Manor started out with an overall index at 64.8. They moved up into the 80s, and they're now at 75.6. That's still higher than 4 years ago. Their growth index in 2021, 2022 is 90.16. It went up to almost, well, actually, it went up to 96, then up to 100. Meaning that their students generally met the state target. So they got all 100 points. Remember that? If you hit the target, you get all 100 points. There is no extra credit. If you go beyond the target, you do not get bonus points.
Kathy, I have a question. So
sure.
You said you were very adamant about saying if a school had a score of 90 or 100, that you had to look below the surface.
Yes.
I assume you're making the same argument if a school has a 33, that there's things to look at.
Absolutely.
If they grow to a 60, that looks like very positive growth, mm-hmm. but are you looking below the surface?
Exactly.
Okay.
Remember I mentioned the word subgroups.
Make sure we're good on that.
Okay. So there are some schools that have very few subgroups or subgroups for accountability purposes. So pretty much every school in the state has students with disabilities because that runs the gamut, everything from students who have speech and hearing supports all the way to severely cognitively impaired students. If there are fewer than 30 students in a category, the building is not held accountable for that subgroup. So it's entirely possible, let's say economically disadvantaged students, now that the elementaries are K-4, Let's think about the, let's take a look at Manor maybe. Maybe currently Manor is accountable for economically disadvantaged students. They have more than 30 of them in grades 3 through 6. Well, guess where half those kids just went? They're not at Manor. And so they'll now have roughly half the economically disadvantaged students. And if that's under 30, that category, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter, but it doesn't affect accountability. So other factors will count more. That piece of the puzzle won't even be there. So I mentioned Monroe Middle School. Monroe High now have students, English language learner students, as part of their puzzle. They didn't have those a year ago. That's a new puzzle piece because they've passed that 30 threshold. So we do need to look under the hood. So I'll give you an idea of what that looks like.
Which school is that?
And the administrators in the room know what these are. This is just one school.
How's that process work? Do we send them data and they assemble it?
What you're getting is
the state pulls it all.
Just about the full detail report for just one of the elementary schools. This is for Raisinville Elementary, and the board's going to need some more because I miscalculated. So you're going to see that overview sheet on top, but then as you go page to page to page, you're going to see what we call disaggregated data. You're going to see data by building, by all students, by students with disabilities, by students who are economically disadvantaged, by white students, African-American students, students of Hispanic heritage, and so on. And if you see little asterisks or little dashes, that means either there weren't enough students to count for accountability or the school didn't have those students to begin with. So because this is a public forum, I can't share with you the reports I share with the administrators that will actually show individual student numbers right down to one Pacific Islander student at Berry Patch Elementary School. We can't show those quite like that in a public setting. So if you're looking at these reports, at the detail going, gads, that's a lot of numbers, and I don't know where the math on how to get from this column and this column to that column. It does take a little explaining. But it truly is, how can we get the most points possible by doing the best that we can for outcomes for kids? And this data, even for our schools, even for Raisinville, which has a really nice school index report, there are places that Raisinville can work, and those are suggested by this report. And there will be other places to look or maybe confirmed by the reports that Andrea shows you and that are available from your student information system and other places. So ideally, we braid all this data together. What's interesting is you've heard of AI. The state is working on a project where AI is going to be able to, in theory, braid a lot of data together faster than we humans can. And instead of going with a trained person who looks at data and says, oh, I think this group of students could use some additional attention. The computer systems are now at a point where they can actually say, based on this and this and this and this, attend to these students, take a deeper look here. So where are we, 2026? Take a look by 2035, and I bet you'll see that. So again, please just be cautious how you use the reports. Remember, it is a lot of data. The detail matters. The devil truly is in the detail. If you're trying to figure out how the calculations work and you can't get the numbers to come out, that's okay. There's what's called business rules, and if you really want to know, I can work with you on that. But overall, the question is, how do we provide support so that our kids have great outcomes? So I am sure that's more than my time, and I'll leave that up to you all if there's time for Q&A or not, but I will hang around.
So to our board members, if you do have a question for Kathy, please go ahead and ask it right here. For many of you, you've been a part of these. We've done this work right here with our school data, index information. And so we wanted to make it so you could ask her questions, but really something for you just to dive into, as you had said.
When did the 25-26 numbers come out?
They will be publicly released in November. They used to be a gift right before Thanksgiving break. OEAA, the accountability people, were infamous for releasing things like test scores and accountability reports the day before a major vacation. this year, we were shocked. They came out about the second week of November. They were earlier than usual. So these are what are called lagging indicators. These are about last year's kids, last year's programs, that kind of thing. So we also have to take that into account because, of course, your administrators, you as the board, have made improvements since the spring of the previous school year. So a lot of these major reports do require some time for the state to process. But that's a great question.
Yeah, because other than the middle school and the high schools, the trend is kind of meaningless because of the way we restructured.
It'll be interesting to see what happens, but yes, my prediction is we're going to see the elementaries lose some subgroups. We're going to see Cantrick have subgroups because of the sheer number of kids, roughly, 300-ish kids per grade level. And then Cantrick's now a feeder, a large-scale feeder to Monroe Middle School, so it truly matters what's happening at Cantrick, making sure those kids get support, because Monroe Middle School is working like crazy to assist and help the kids and staff who are there through the use and part of REG grant funds, several hundred thousand dollars of REG grant funds between Monroe Middle School, Orchard Center, Arborwood, and Custer. So, good question. Other questions that you might have?
So, more time on that. If you want to dive into it and have other questions, we'll be glad to answer. Kathy, thank you so very much for tonight. I truly appreciate your knowledge.
You're so welcome.
On this matter. We do have Andrea stepping up, and so your next document is
you're welcome.
Current
thank
data.
Thank you so very much.
Right here. And so, we're starting out with the MSTEP, PSAT. We want to spend more time right there. We'll dive into the iReady because the iReady is that time of year which we've been through that many times, so we want to make sure we have time right here to have any questions answered. So Andrew, you want to come on up to the microphone, and we'll get started on this first part right here.
All right. So there was a request to go back and look at some of our testing data for our secondary students. This is from the spring state testing. So we were, there were some questions around this or areas that you wanted to dive in deeper to, but it's not the first time that you've seen these numbers. We did review these back in the fall, I believe. And so you can see on this chart would be each grade and the subject area tests that they took, and then there is some data showing proficiency back from the year 2022 through to the spring of 25, and then that final column would be a change in proficiency from 24-25. Anywhere that it's highlighted green was a proficiency change in the positive, and then where you see the areas of red, we had a dip in proficiency. This is not cohort data, it is just straight grade level, so a comparison of grade levels from year to year.
So I think we've mentioned this, we talked about this before, these are not the same students, and when we go from fourth grade to fourth grade to fourth grade, they're a new group of students.
Right.
So looking from 24 to 25, is following the students.
If you looked back at 2022, seventh grade, then 2023, eighth grade, that would be the same.
Yeah, because otherwise we're not following the same students. And like
it's a great
Kathy
level.
Said, you know, all of that plays a role into it. So, kind of changes the numbers a little bit.
Yeah, so if you kind of look in a diagonal fashion, you'll see a cohort of students just looking straight across there is just the grade level data.
And also I wanted to add to your point, because of these are just our secondary results, we do from seventh to eighth grade, we're not using the same measuring stick, so to speak, from MSTEP to PSAT. So those, those cohorts, it's kind of wonky when we get to this level.
But that same thought process of following students is applicable through the MSTEP conversation as well. Which I just always want to be mindful that when we're looking at it, we're not following the same students, so try to follow the same students, I think, gives us a clear picture of how the impact of what we're doing is affecting the students.
And we'll talk a little more about cohort data as we get to the iReady. I think you'll see some interesting pieces there as well. So I don't know if there were specific questions on this or...
I guess the one that kind of sticks out for me is the 11th grade science, which, you know, dropped in 24 from 25.2 to 16.7, which is significantly more of a drop than a couple of the others that did drop. Any explanation, any, have you dived into that to see what would be behind that?
The science department at the high school has done some work together, sitting down and looking at the types of questions that are asked on that assessment, looking for areas where, is it students interpreting a graph? Is that the issue? And then being able to open up those conversations where you see that's a cross-curricular skill. So where are they seeing those types of things in math? Do they see those things in ELA? Is it a matter of reading a passage and picking out a main idea? The science test is a lot of reading. So when we look at those, it's fine-tuning and saying, where are the patterns? Where are kids scoring? Are they scoring high in certain areas? Are they doing well in one category on that science test, but then not doing poorly in one area, and then bringing those conversations into their daily instruction? So the science department at the Mineral, and I'm sure, I know we've got a couple of administrators here too, but I've met with them a few times, and they have done some deeper dives into their data.
Didn't we discuss that when these first came out? Wasn't there some big major change in something?
Social studies. And we say we really can't compare the social studies tests from year to year. That
was
something MBE said, be very cautious in comparing because there was a change in the social studies test. So it's...
stays pretty consistent.
Right. And the state said it's almost invalid to compare those from year to year.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember which one.
And Tom, I'd like to add something too with science. So MDE has given great leniency to school districts in how science credits are earned. Mm-hmm. And if this test is taken in 11th grade, you would think, well, they've had 3 years of science. However, because of the leniency that MDE has given, students can take a multiple of things, including CTE courses, to get those third science credit. So I guess I don't know how to look at it. I'd say I flip-flop. They're tested over this much information, but they may have only technically had classes that are testable in this much. So I guess that's another thing that our science department has pointed out, I guess in fairness to them, that our students are tested on courses that they may not actually be taking.
Yeah, because when I think of science, I think of physics or chemistry.
Physical science, biology, chemistry. But not every student takes those courses.
You can now get science credits for a
CTE course.
Or there are other science credits like physiology. We have a whole gamut that I can't think of right now. So in fairness to those science teachers, they're tested on courses that they may not have actually taken.
So if you just want to keep right on going,
all right. So we will move through. Oops, sorry, am I going to skip to page there?
Yep, these next two pages, math and ELA.
So these next two pages, it just broke it down, the math and the ELA, but it's the same data that was on that first chart. Do you want me to go right into the iReady?
I guess I'm a little 10th grade math staying persistently low. And we haven't busted above 15.3, and we've progressively gotten lower. I didn't follow, granted, I didn't
10th
follow. 10th
grade
COVID.
Math was, one thing to note with our math at the high school that we're going to want to watch is that we did adopt the new math program, which was a phased-in approach at the high school. So the reason we did that is because students were in Math 1, Math 2, Math 3, and we're switching more to, instead of that integrated model, we switched to a traditional path where they will take Algebra 1, Geometry, and then Algebra 2. When these test scores came out, those 10th grade students would have been in Math 2. So our 10th grade students this year are taking Geometry, and they're using the Envision program. So it'll be interesting to see what the impact is as we see now it's implemented in 9th grade and 10th grade. Next year, we'll have full implementation with our Algebra 2 program coming in. So that math at the high school, we are watching. The math teachers are working really closely with consultants. They actually just had a work day today. And So it'll be interesting to see how the math shifts at the high school once we have full integration and students on that traditional path versus that integrated path. And again, we didn't switch completely because if we had done that, there would be students entering courses that may be missing something. So if you're a 11th grader right now, you'd be in math 3 as opposed to entering into an algebra 2 course.
We were declining before that, right? We went from 15.3 to 9.7. That had nothing to do with what this conversation is.
Yes, it was declining, yes. But that also was the reason why we looked at we need something in our math department, and that was bringing in our new math program.
Okay. Let's hope it works.
Yes.
As she said, too, it's going back to the traditional model of Algebra 1.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Algebra 2.
Yeah.
And that was something that math department there was really did a lot of research. At one point the pendulum swung really far one way to say let's go to the integrated approach, but now we're kind of moving back to that traditional path. So moving into what we have for you next, this is really tiny. So I'm going to see if I can actually just zoom into. So we gave you an overview. You've seen this table. It tracks all the way back to the year of 22-23. This is our iReady data. And so Kathy talked a lot about some lagging data, which would be data from the spring, which is what we looked at with our testing data, and then looking at that current, where are we at right now with our tests. So iReady is one of the benchmark assessments that we use throughout the year to say where are our kids at, what's the progress that they're making. So we administer that in our grades K-6. They take that 4 times a year. And then our middle school and our high school are on a little bit different schedule just because of they're set up with their quarters and semesters, but our K-4 takes this 4 times throughout the year. So everyone comes in taking this at the beginning of the year. So when we started out the year, I'm just trying to make this a little bit bigger for those out there, but I don't know if I can make it bigger without losing it. So you can see the progression here of where we've started. Young fives in kindergarten are always a little bit tricky at the beginning of the year because we don't know who's walking through our doors at that point unless they've been a young fives student of ours from the year prior. So it's always hard to make comparisons from year to year on where kids start, but it gives us a good idea of where they are. And again, just as a quick recap, when we look at tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, tier 1 means that they're performing at or above grade level. Tier 2 means that we're approaching that grade level, so we're within the year. And then tier 3 is anything more than that. There is no tier 3 for kindergarten, for young fives or kindergarten, because there is nothing below that.
So looking, I'm going back to my original follow the students criteria, because that's the best way we can know, because we're following the same group of students throughout the years. And so now that we have so much data, we've got so many years, it's kind of easy to pick that up. And so I pulled some of those numbers and looked down through it. And so, for example, if you do, if they were in first grade in 22 and 23, then they would be in second grade the next year, third grade, and fourth grade. And so you look at those one in tier one, they were 46%, 37, 50, and 28. So there you can see there was a drop, because tier one, you want the number to go up and not go down. And then you look at, I did tier three of the same years. And so tier three starts out in first grade, 5%, 22%, 35%, 28%, and 35%. So starting out in first grade, there was only 5% in tier three. But by the time they hit fourth grade, 35% of those students are now in tier three. And so, you know, even though you may look fourth grade to fourth grade, like that's kind of... I did the same thing for fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh grade, and it's very similar in the way it follows through. So I'm looking at the same set of students following through and struggling to see.
So I think when you talk about tier three, there's always that, tier three always underscores that need for the continued support because standards increase, rigor increases, expectations increase as the grade levels go up. So some students who may be in that tier two spot the year prior, as those expectations rise, as the test, the rigor of the test rises, some of those students could fall back to tier three. So as we look at tier three, it always tells us a story of needing to make sure that we have supports that are aimed not only at remediation, but also acceleration towards a proficiency target or goal.
I understand that, but from an education standpoint, this is the kind of information we have to look at. And so when I look at that and we say, we have, and I know I've said this before, anything that's been asked of us, I don't think we've ever said no. I don't think we've told one teacher, one staff, one anybody no to anything anybody's requested, wanted, or done. And I look at that and we say, well, they're automatically going to fall to, because tier three, you're 2 years behind by then. And so by fourth grade, we have 35% of those students are now 2 years behind. And so I'm struggling to say how are those interventions then deemed successful when tier three is decreasing. I mean, tier one is decreasing and tier three is increasing.
So I'm going to push back just a little bit because it's not always decreasing. So tier one, I want you to look back at 24-25 at our second graders.
I'm just telling 27%. You the ones I pulled up.
This year, 25, we went to 50%, that same group as third graders
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, but look at them in fourth grade.
First,
they're down to
28%. That's not the same group of kids. I'm talking 24, 25 second graders are our current third graders this year.
Oh,
so
I'm
in
24,
25, second grade students were at 27% at this point in the year. This year, we took those kids as third graders are at 50%. It's the first time we've seen a 50% mark in many years. We have our new ELA program that's being implemented across most of the classrooms. And I think we can see if we even look from the beginning of the year till now. So if we do look at the same group of students, not cohorting, but from the beginning of the year till now, almost everyone has risen in their proficiency in tier one.
Yeah, I was just following, and all I did was take
and
first through
pockets.
Fourth grade and fourth through seventh grade and just wrote the numbers down. I mean, I didn't go looking for anything. I just strictly wrote down what I saw. And so I'm saying, okay, are the interventions that we have been putting in place, you know, how's that showing success over the years?
I think one of the things that Kathy was sharing earlier is that this is an example of achievement, right? This is a summative assessment that we're looking at. And achievement is a snapshot of time where questions about achievement are, how did we get here? And it's not an appropriate thing to determine if all of our strategies led to this particular moment. Our strategies, we should be considering our growth when we're talking about if our strategies are effective. We should be looking at the growth factor, not the achievement factor. That's what Kathy was talking about earlier in her presentation. So I think more appropriate questions, like what Kathy was guiding us in her presentation earlier, when we're looking at achievement, instead of going, well, we've done all these inputs, why aren't we getting the outputs that we want? We should start probing those questions more along the lines of, like, looking at the patterns like you've shown us, right? What could possibly be the contributing patterns there? Why could that particular cohort have experienced that instead of...
What's different about the second grade test?
Right. Mm-hmm. This cohort of students that's now fourth graders in the 2025-2026 academic year. So, like, those types of questions are what we learned earlier in our presentation for achievement-style questions. Growth questions are where we can really drill into... Are these measures achieving what we need them to achieve?
So I appreciate all the information you give. I appreciate your thing. But I still have, this is what I'm given. And so for me to sit up here, this is what I'm given to determine what I think what we've implemented, because we put the sign on it that said, yeah, go for it. Not everything, but majority of stuff. And are what we're doing you know, putting our dollars and putting our stuff where it needs to be. And these are the measures that we have. It's one of the measures. We have the other measures. We have these measures. But when, like, tier three, you start out in fourth grade, by the time they were 52% in tier three, by grade seven, there's still 48% of them there. Like, that's just real data. I mean, it's just truth.
But
it's not trying to do anything nefarious. It's just pointing out a fact.
True, but it's that factoid is not necessarily a full and complete picture. That 48% or whatever the data point is doesn't necessarily mean it's the same 48% of students that were represented
sure.
earlier also in tier three. That 48% could be comprised of a totally different population of students, right? It could be students that moved in. It could be students with the moving around from school to school. It could be students that, who knows what, it could be a variety of variables. That's the thing about education is that we don't have as many constants that we can control for in our educational system. So, yes, it's very important that we have this data, but the context behind the data, I don't think that we can start making broad statements about, like, the students this, the students that, because we don't know who the students are. We don't know those students' growth, right? So, yes, it's important for us to have this 30,000-foot view, but I don't think that is I don't think we're getting the right – I don't think we're drilling into the information that should be drilled into.
Which is what our buildings do.
So
our buildings drill into the information. Our buildings take not just a number, not just a percent, and they put a student name to it. They put a class to it, a teacher. They look at the student's plan. What interventions has the student taken part in so far? What data do we have to show either that that intervention is working or that that intervention is not working? And if it's not working, what's the next step for that student? So that's the work that our buildings do. Our buildings really drill down to that nitty-gritty. They look at where are students who are within X amount of points on each of these tiers. So who's at the top? Who's in the middle? Who's at the bottom of that tier? Because I might be in tier one right now, but if I'm teetering on the edge without the support that I need, I might stay there, but I might fall to the other tier. And so that's the work that the buildings spend time doing, and they are very diligent, meeting with teachers weekly in most cases, where coaches are sitting down. They're sitting down with me. We're looking at the data together. We're really pulling it apart. So that's the place where we track a student. Is it an attendance issue? Is the student not there? Is there something going on with the student, something in their life that we don't know about that could be affecting it? This is a moment in time, so how does it compare to how the student is performing overall in their classroom? So when we look at their classwork, the conference notes, the everyday assessments that teachers give, how are they doing on those compared to how they did on this iReady? So again, the iReady is one data point.
So that's exactly what Kathy said. You all, the teachers, the staff, that's what you do, okay? Mm-hmm. This is what we do. And so this is the data that we get. We don't look at the individual child because we aren't at the position to look at the mm-hmm. individual child. What we look at is where are we sitting? So when a seventh grade group is a group of children of seventh grade and they're 48% of that group is 2+ years behind, that's real data. So on the earlier pages, it was green if there was a success, red if there wasn't. I want to cheerlead the green. I do. I want all of these to improve. But we have to acknowledge when it's also not really moving a whole lot and we have that many kids in tier three.
Seventh grade at 57% at the beginning of the year in that tier three. They're at 48 now. Mm-hmm. So that group has moved a bit within that tier this year. If we want to, you know, when you look at that cohort, again, you just have to be careful because it isn't the exact same students. But if we look across the year, we're talking about the same students in that tier three, and we had a decrease for that tier three for everyone.
What may help, Darla, if we can go forward on about a handful of slides, when we get the seventh grade. When we get to seventh grade, I'm
going to... Well, we have this question every time. How do kids in Monroe Public Schools end up 2 years behind or more when they're still in the same system using the same interventions and they're getting further and further behind? That's where I struggle every time this data comes to me.
Just support for what Darla's saying. All we can do is evaluate whether the system and the instruction is effective or not effective, given the tools that... we've approved for you.
I think the one thing that, so to try to marry these worlds, because we've got this stuff, and I can't tell much from this stuff, and you've got all the stuff. I mean, we used to have a curriculum committee, and I think there might be some value in allowing some school board members to interact a little bit at that level, that they might have a bit of an understanding. It's not that we might have some insights that you may not have, and you're certainly going to show us insights that we didn't have. But I think when we have this, we do this, what, once a quarter, it feels like? Right. I mean, it's the same conversation every time. Mm-hmm. We could probably go back and listen to this tape every time, and we're having these same conversations.
Yeah. I say the same
and I feel like maybe there's something we can do fundamentally that may change that a little bit. And I'm completely, this is stream of thought process. Yeah. I think we had a curriculum committee for a reason, and I don't think it was to interfere with people and the curriculum. I think it might have been a situation when we might understand better what's happening within the curriculum. Just a thought.
Okay. I think that's something we'll definitely talk about and explore and maybe think about what that looks like. And I don't know that I've been a part of that with a board, but... These next charts do outline, this is something that you've seen before too, where we give you the actual numbers of students. So you have percentages on the other, now you have numbers. So you see it broken down between, in tier one, again, that's the kids who are either above, that's going to be a dark green color, so they're performing above where they should be. The on-grade level, which is the green, the approaching within that year, and then you'll have the red in the later grades will be broken down between... the darker red and the lighter red. So for this chart, I did break out, right? Ready for Us doesn't give that percentage without, it combines all of our young fives and kindergartens. Exactly. So we went in and we separated them for you just so we could see. Now, young fives, just keep in mind, that is not a requirement for students. So when you see a student in the yellow, it doesn't mean that they're below grade level. Actually, they're where they should be. But those green will show you that they're above. So we did break down the young fives, but as you get down in here, we'll look at the kindergarten proficiency. So you can see in the fall for kindergarten, we had 20 students in the fall that performed above grade level. We now have 49 performing at above grade level. 45 students were on grade level. We have 85 currently on grade level, and we had 194 approaching, and we now have 132 approaching in that kindergarten.
So I think something that might be helpful is if we could see this visualization of the data in the cohort style that some of our other board colleagues really value. So if we could see the 2021 kindergartners and then their 2022 first grade to their 2023 second grade to their 2024, I lost what grade I'm on. And so on.
And some of this does help with that because what you may see is that while they haven't quite reached that proficiency yet, their numbers have moved throughout the stages. So we may see students who've moved out of that darker red. Yes, they're still considered tier three, but they're not two or more grade levels behind now. Mm-hmm. They may not be proficient yet, but maybe they moved from the more than one grade level to the approaching. So if you guys would like to see that, I can work on getting that to you as well.
The reason we went to this chart, I remember the whole conversations that led up to this, because this is numbers that we can look at. Because before it was like percentages and partials, and we're like, just show us the students. We just want to see the students. We want to see where the students fall. We want to cheer successes. Mm-hmm. Believe me, we want everybody in the green. Like, we seriously do.
And I think some of these numbers will also help you to see, and this is just a slight change, but we have move-ins that happen throughout the year. So you'll see that the numbers shift a little bit. Like, why is this bar a little bit longer than the one from the fall? Well, because we have a few more students now in this grade level. So you may see that throughout the grades, and even throughout the cohorts, you may see the number of students change from year to year that are in each of those grades. So we'll kind of move through. This is our reading for first grade. Again, you'll see the same pattern. We have our students increasing in that either above grade level or on grade level are approaching. Our approaching went down, but you'll notice that's because the on grade level went up, but we cut the number in half of the more than one grade level from 14 to now 7 students sitting there. First grade's really, as we look at that, it's like we're so close to getting rid of that red. So we want to say, like, who are those 7 kids? How close are they to getting out of that red? Let's get them out of there. And so as we give the next assessment, we want to see, can we get them? Can we move them out of there? So those are the conversations that are happening at the building. Now, all those 7 students are scattered throughout our buildings, but it's important that we know who they are and where they're at on that proficiency scale, that score.
What gets me is when we move into second grade, look how big the red grows. So I wish there were still 7 students that I don't want to stay in the red, but each year that we go, and the more they move through our system, even though they may move within there, that red section grows and grows.
That is why it's important also to look in this yellow section. Yep.
And that's why I provided you July's one. So if you look at second grade last year, just as a fast example, we had 95 kids in red beginning of the year. This year in second grade, we had 96. When we finish, we're at 49, okay? We don't want the red to be as big at the beginning, okay? Mm-hmm. And so last year, at this very moment, we had 80 students in the red. This year, we're right now at 84. So back to your request, yes, that can happen by putting in the cohort.
I don't want to lose this, though. Yeah.
No.
We'll still do it. So I'll do that in addition.
Second graders last. So you see the comparison from when they went from first grade forward, and then you've got your second grade. Yeah. Like, I put in second graders last year, go, okay, how did we do to see that, so that would help go, okay, are we on a similar pace, not on a similar pace. The interesting thing was last year we had 30 students in the dark green and 47 in the light green, and this year we have 36 and 60. So the green has shifted larger this year for second grade by the number of students. So but the report that Mary had requested, I think, would be extremely helpful. So you see it, and keeping them in a
Mary, do you want that to go back to 2022?
Yeah, I think the third trimester
it's on the chart
is the best, because it's gotten up through the year.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what we need. We need to see the end results.
Yep,
we need to look at the end results this year, look at the end results, because everything else is y'all's job, you know?
So I talked about our third grade students for a minute, and I want to pause here for a second, because I do want to celebrate this group of kids. This is a group we have been watching for a couple of years. There were a lot of pieces that went into play with this third grade group in thinking about lower class sizes, interventions that we had in place, tier one instruction. And it was the first time when we looked at those scores and we saw that 50%. You can see that they grew significantly in either the above grade level and the on grade level numbers. Yes, we're still tackling that red, but to see that number in third grade, where there's typically a shift that happens where we take K-2 learning to read, and third grade and above, we're reading to learn. And so we're seeing this shift now where that didn't drop. You know, our students have this comprehension piece that comes into third grade, and instead we went up. So we're really celebrating that one, the 50%. And then you'll see similar patterns. I know we're nearing that time. So obviously, as we get into those higher grades, there are some conversations that we do want to continue. There are some areas where we agree the growth is not where we want it to be. especially as we get in those higher 6th, 7th, 8th grades, we really are drilling down. We need to see where our students are at.
It should be right there.
Yeah.
Ours is 5th grade. Ours is
comparison. It's a different handout, I think.
No, that should be...
It might be all in that one that you have right there.
Yeah, that should...
Because I'm in... Yep. I think it's a couple pages down.
So, and just as a quick example to the question you've had before. So, like, last year's fifth graders, we had 68 students in the dark red. This year's at 46. When they were fourth graders in the dark red, which is greater 2 years behind, there were 71 students, and this year there's 46. So that dark red is greater than 2 years behind, two or more years, that number has come down significantly. It's still in
it's still red.
Moved over
but.
There. So back to that document that we'll provide to you will be so you can see it from both last year's kids to keeping it in a cohort stance to go, okay, is those areas shrinking or growing?
I know we're running out of time, so I wanted to follow up a question that when Kathy was doing her presentation, I saw in there and I wanted to write down. One of the things we talk about is a improvement plan each year. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the year, any improvement plan, you're looking at successes, improvements, or anything in there that can highlight how we're here, where we're here, and where we go forward. So do you have the improvement plan from last year, and where did you end up with that, and how is that helping you move forward this year?
So are you referencing, you know, we talk about improvement plan this year, we're tied to our strategic plan, and our goals are there. So we same things last year, each building sets their goals for what they'd like. We're at 5% growth within that. So we're the same this year. We're aligned with our strategic plan. And each building has their plans. Each building team reviews where they landed. As a district team, we meet and we say, how do we compare to last year? Are we meeting it? Where are we meeting those goals? Where are we not meeting those goals?
See, we don't have any of that information.
I'm not sure that you would have individual buildings.
So what I'm
so
saying is,
you have a strategic or a district plan.
If you made it a education improvement plan, I'm going to use James back there as an example, and their team came up with a improvement plan on what they wanted to do with their education and where they wanted to kind of get themselves. You know, we know where we're looking at up here and what he did. And so at the end of the year, he can look and say, we hit our target goals, their own personal goals. We saw areas here. We saw this wasn't working. I got that from her presentation when it talked about an improvement plan, so it made me just wonder.
She may reference the MyKIP plan.
So I think what you're referencing at the building level, it's individual improvement plans.
Right.
So each student has...
The school does this,
the
like...
The school follows the curriculum, which is the materials that we've elected to use.
Right.
And then from there, an individualized plan is created based on the needs of one student.
Right. So if we put a curriculum in place and we're looking at the data here and we're going, well, we're not thinking that was a very successful curriculum. It may be different than what you're seeing there, but that's how I'm correlating it.
But for our ELA, we're not even fully launched.
We know that changed again.
But for the interventions that get used, it's a multitude of different interventions based on if it worked for the child or not.
Yeah,
and so it gets adapted.
I'm just trying to think how we can break down and look at this in a different way. It's where we're at.
Maybe going back to what Brian said earlier, each one of us could be assigned to a different school, and you can explain to us exactly what Darla was talking about, your plans at the individual school for the students, what you guys talk about, what your plan is on that level. And if each one of us can pick a school, we can bring it back here to the board and have a better idea exactly what you guys are doing and what you need from us.
Yeah, and
does
this
that
sounds.
Make sense?
I think when I was talking about the curriculum meeting, something a little bit different, and
different
talking to Dave, talking to Dave, I think data meetings are someplace that would be mm-hmm. better used for us.
Right, and that would be a team. A it wouldn't just right. be with me. You would be. It would. Right. I can be included in that, but there's a school team that's involved right. in that, and that's their building network team,
and I think
their
that
leadership
would make,
team.
That would make more sense. And I don't think there's not a desire on my part mm-hmm. at all to micromanage just whatsoever.
And that's, you know, you get a glimpse into how they look at data yeah. and how they determine which students take part in which intervention, as well as how they look at not just the students that are in need of intervention, but in the day-to-day instruction of how students are performing in their classrooms.
So if we could make that, if that somehow could be something we work on, I think that'd be beneficial.
Yeah, I'd certainly be interested in looking at the middle school and high school, because when I look at, I'm an engineer, so the math is more important to me than the reading. Obviously, they're connected. But I look at, let's say 7th grade, trimester 3 of 2025, you've got 113 students in two or more grades behind and 38 that are one grade behind. And it actually gets worse when the 8th grade, 121, two grades, 34, one grade. They're really in a hole coming out of 8th grade trying mm-hmm. to make that up in high mm-hmm. school. Mm-hmm. So I guess, personally, I'd like to see how that's being handled, what kind of plans are in place yep. there.
So two things we're going to do for you guys. One is we'll obviously have that answer, but I think further is we'll come back very quickly here and bring you a document where you'll see it laid out by a grade level that's cohorted, mm-hmm. so you can see, okay, how has, back to Mary's question, so there's a lot more information right here on this little graph.
Because sitting here looking at the data and comparing it to the curriculums and whatnot, I would look at it and say we're missing. There's something that's not connecting, because I would like to see these numbers a whole bigger change when we're talking 4 years. In some of these instances.
Okay, and then the only thing I would, so just to clarify, you want to see a chart just like this, student numbers back to
I want to see us get the students to the point where we're not sitting
I'm,
with big
Yeah,
rooms.
I'm just that's asking as far as document-wise, yeah. what document you're requesting.
Whatever Mary asked for is fine. I like this.
This thing. Format
and she wants
cohorted
she
back
wants.
To 2022? Is that your okay? And then the only caution I would say when we talk curriculum wise to say there would be shifts in there where a curriculum has changed. So it is, you can't say a curriculum is working or not working after just a short.
We will not year. Make that.
So that would be the only caution I would say to you. It would be keep in mind, and we can make notes where changes have happened.
Okay. Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Okay. Next public commentary for. For any, Carrie, anything?
Chelsea, did you want to speak at the board meeting or the work session? I'll speak and I'll try to make it slain.
Sure.
All right, Chelsea's a pro at this, so I'm just going to walk her through and let her know when her time is up.
No, I'm not. If I could get in Huddle, I would watch it on Huddle. But I'm not optimistic they're going to win anyways. But. Have you watched our basketball this season?
Glass half empty, glass full.
A realist. My name is Chelsea Robinson, in case anybody doesn't know, and I'm here to comment on the Dr. Hessen issue. I had sent an email regarding this. Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Thank you, Mr. Sabadini, for acknowledging my email. I've gone line by line through the complaint filed. I was obviously bored over Christmas break. And if you line it up next to the state law, MHSAA regulations, Elliott Larson Act, FERPA, and Title IX for the state of Michigan, we should be showing our administrator much more support than we have. Unless there was some secret comment made that was not named, the law was followed. Title IX ensures equal participation in classes, sports, clubs, and other activities. It also provides safety, protection, and fairness in athletics, academics, privacy, and bodily integrity, along with fairness in sexed sports. This was a female volleyball game, and all athletes were female, as Title IX also includes protection for gender identity. MHSAA allows transgender females to play sports with a waiver filed in a time frame for state events where, again, privacy knowledge is protected with FERPA and HIPAA from sharing. The athlete is a transgender female with the same protections as all of our females in the district, whether we agree or not. The same athlete is also protected to use the locker room and the bathroom with the gender they identify as. In this complaint, the requested actions are not in line with the state law. Banning transgender athletes is not a local law issue. This is a state law, and they are allowed to play. Banning biological males from female locker rooms if they are transgender females, again, is not legal in the state of Michigan. Wanting an investigation on who knew what and when is protected under FERPA and HIPAA. Essentially, no one's business, and we can only assume and hope that the AD at the schools did their due diligence, meaning Skylines. If Dr. Hessen is off for speaking out on a podcast, technically he didn't speak about the case. He spoke about empathy and compassion, which we could use more of, regardless of our personal beliefs. If this is discipline, I'm wondering why 30 days is not sufficient. I assume we have to wait until the investigation is over. I really hope that we can be supportive if and when he comes back, strictly based on facts. And I do want to shout out to Kyle Reed and Mandy Bomia for stepping up, because I can't imagine that any of this is easy, stepping into a position that requires a lot along with their own position. They've done so with a lot of sarcasm and humor. Just want to reiterate that we don't have to agree with each other's opinions and personal beliefs, but we can treat each other with kindness and compassion more so than we have done recently. Thank you.
Thanks, Chelsea.
I got a question. Do you have to hand this thing in and speak? What's your process?
Do you want to do it now or for the board meeting? You're going to do it now? I might as well. Is it broadcast? I can do it right now. There's no problem.
My name is Roosevelt Barnes. I'm a former athlete here 50 years ago. I played basketball here. I'm a former coach here at Monroe Public Schools. I'm a former program director of Back to Basics, a tutoring program that was held at Lincoln Elementary and Hollywood Schools, working with kids back in about, I don't know, 30 years ago. But anyway, this is my home, where I grew up, and I want to see Monroe High succeed. I want to see the kids have opportunities, okay? And I was going to speak, follow up on what she said about the laws. Want to know, what's the law follow, okay? Did he follow, because as a former coach, I've coached at three high schools. I've coached at Wayne State University. I've coached girls, boys. And I also know that you have logistical restraints and things that you got to do as a coach. And a lot of times athletic directors are out someplace else and the coaches are trying to get things together. It's a very difficult job as an athletic director. And as a father, I'm also a father. I got girls. I would not want to have a transgender athlete in there myself, okay? However, we do have to follow laws, okay? And I'm a person that I believe in following laws. So if Dr. Hessen followed the law, I believe he did, because he is he did those things at Bowling Green State University, where he came from, where he got his doctor's degree. He was a compliance person there. Title IX person at Bowling Green State University, because I'm a graduate of Bowling Green State University. I'm an athlete from Bowling Green State University. I know a lot about his background and what type of person Dr. Chet Hessen is. And we have two outstanding people. We probably got more, but Steve Polizzi and Dr. Hessen are two outstanding people leading our school. And we should get behind them guys and support them guys, because they're about helping kids. And in the last 50 years, I haven't seen two people from the athletic leadership and the principal's leadership that have the compassion, consideration, concern for our student athletes and the growth and development that those two men want for Monroe Public Schools and this community. So I think that we should find the facts, find the truth, and we should support those guys. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm going to speak now as well. My name is Aaron Lavender. I'm a lifelong resident of Monroe. I went to Monroe High School, and I didn't want to talk about the man, Chet. You guys hired him for a reason, and he's doing his job. He cares about these students. I've seen it firsthand. Me and Rosie Barnes are part of a group called Man on a Mission, and Chet got with us to see what we can do for our community with the kids. He cares about these kids. I'm asking you guys, does the crime fit the punishment? And I would say, no, it doesn't. It doesn't fit the punishment. I watched the video myself, and it doesn't fit the punishment. He is exactly what we needed for this community. He's exactly what we needed for these kids. He's exactly what we need for our community. He is everything that we want our kids to be and our sons to look up to. I wholeheartedly support Mr. Polizzi, because he's a man of principle, integrity as well. We are looking into the future of what our kids are looking to be. And Chet represents each one of those kids. I know right now we're in a political climate that is really ripping us apart. We did not hire him to be someone that's going to destroy our community. We're looking at someone to build our community. And Chet is doing that. I've already seen the impact he's made on our kids and on our school. The school that I'm proud of. I'm a Monroe High Trojan, and Chet is a Monroe High Trojan through and throughout. We have to look within ourselves to say, are we doing right by him? Are we doing right by him for sticking up for the kids, not just a certain group of kids, but for all kids? I'm very passionate about it because I believe in Chet. I believe in Mr. Polizzi. I believe in the vision that they see for our schools. And us as a board, I say us because a lot of us put you guys in this position. A lot of us did that. And we expect you guys to stand up and stand up for the people that's in position to make a difference for our children. Put aside personal feelings and political rhetoric that divides this community. I will actually say that did you guys do right by him? Because this could have been done in-house. But it got out to the community, and the next thing you know, one thing led to another. Do you guys do right by him? I don't know. That's something you have to ask yourself. But I don't think the crime fit the punishment. I think he should be reinstated immediately. I think you should get behind him. You should support him. And we as a community needs to come together. We need healing in this country. And we can start by being examples to the rest of the nation of what we can do when we stand behind each other. Monroe is different than any other place I've ever been. I love this community. I love Monroe. And we should get behind the leaders of Monroe. Think about it. Think about it. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Is that it? Okay, that concludes our agenda. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Do I have support?
Support.
Show of hands. Okay. We will take a 5-minute break. The Monroe Public Schools Board of Education work session for Tuesday, January 13th, 2026 is adjourned. The time is 7:07, and we will reconvene.